platform.
Good evening, everyone. It's the Hoaxbusters Live on Saturday night, and I hope that we are going to have a good show tonight if everybody comes in and we can get to talk with them. I'm waiting to actually hear back from Ryan Masano. That will be good. I don't know if we're going to go earlier with him or not. I don't know yet. But if not, we'll go with our program the way it is. But we want to first of all thank Speak Free Radio for having us on. It's a great forum to be on, and we appreciate that we can do this. Mm-hmm. And we also are going to be talking about Money Tree Publishing, which is the publishing arm of Dave Gaheri there. He has some good books we're going to talk about later, like we always do. And we'll go from there. So anyway, I haven't heard back from Ryan. I got my phone right here. He's been texting me, so I'm not sure what's going to happen there. But I did tell him to come in. After, we'll say 9 o'clock-ish, once we get through with all our business there. So we go through the book, The 6 Million Fact of Fiction by Peter Winter. And Diane's been covering that book regularly. Every week we've been going over. We're up to, what, 14? Mm-hmm. Chapter 14, Diane?
Yes, thanks to Vinny helping with positioning me in the right place. Of course, I have it all marked. But he helped write my presumption. So anyway, yeah, we're on 14 Sobibor.
Okay. So anyway, this is one of the books that you really have to have mm-hmm. in your arsenal of books. Okay, 6 Million Fact of Fiction. Of course, the other one is the Myth of German Villainy, which I have behind me. My camera's not adjusted right so you can see it, but...
Diana can pull it up if you want her to.
Well, that's okay. We're gonna look at the books when we get into it later. But those are the two books you have to have, folks, if you want to understand World War One, World War Two. That's the Myth of German Villainy. That's going to give you a lot of information about how everything started, why the war started, who are the good guys, who are the bad guys, and then of course the 6 Million Fact of Fiction is basically. You know, dealing with this topic itself, because this is the big part of World War II. Even though the Holocaust wasn't a part of World War II, right. They made it a big That's part right. of World War II. So we have to kind of go along with the nonsense here. And again, if you want to, we're going to get in the site later. But when people do get on that site, Money Tree Publishing, you'll see that all the books are there. And if you put in Hoax, you get 10% off your books. And that's good. But you really should get these books in your arsenal of books. Mm-hmm. That's what we're trying to do. Okay. So, Miss Diane, we're going to let you start. If something changes here with Ryan,
absolutely.
We'll right. bring him in. We'll continue on. But, yes, you're going to continue on with the review of The 6 Million Fact of Fiction by Peter Winter. All right?
Absolutely. And I have a feeling that for a lot of people, it's just a review for us. There's new information also. For a lot of people, this is brand new information. We're on chapter 14, Sobibor. It actually was a temporary camp which only existed for 15 months. There's actually a movie with Rutger Hauer and Escape from Sobibor. And what's interesting is they do promote it being a somewhat of a work camp, but it's more a transit camp. They always get it wrong. And largely, there had a huge contingent of Soviet soldiers in it. It was located on the outskirts of the town of Sobibor in Lublin of occupied Poland. So the Sobibor camp was, like Belzec, chosen for proximity to the labor camps of Lublin. Construction of the camp was completed in April 42, and according to so-called Holocaust expert Raoul Hilberg, a diesel engine was installed by the same individuals who constructed the gas chambers at Belzec to operate a killing center very similar in design to that of Belzec in his book, The Destruction of the European Jews. Hilberg based his assertion of diesel engine on survivor accounts, but it is significant to mention that other Holocaust experts have contended that it was a gasoline engine. They can't agree. This claim likely emerged after the challenges associated with diesel gassing methods were recognized by the Holocaust storytellers. Consequently, a substantial debate still exists among official Holocaust historians regarding this issue, and it remains unresolved because they can't agree. It's asserted that the first mass gassing occurred in Sobibor in May 42. That would be like right after it was constructed. And that the operation was so effective that a new set of gas chambers reportedly modeled precisely on the second stage ones at Belzec, that is the brick and concrete ones and not the wooden gas chambers, were purportedly built in September 42. The camp allegedly ceased operation in October 43, meaning it was operational for only 15 months. Once more, akin to Belzec, the brevity of its existence argues powerfully against the notion of a killing center and supports the idea of it being a transit and dispersal camp for the nearby factories and resettlement areas. Chlorine and electricity, according to survivors, claim bizarre execution methods in Sobibor. Despite the official version of the gassing procedure being one of the engine exhaust fumes in gas chambers, several survivor eyewitnesses have alleged that chlorine was used to kill prisoners at Sobibor. I don't think that came out in the movie either. Survivor witness Hella Fellenbaum Weiss explained how Jews on their way to Sobibor were gassed with chlorine. Yeah, this ought to be this. I wonder if she was like the sausage lady. The arrival of another convoy distressed me in the same way, she says. It was thought to come from Lvov, L-V-O-V, but nobody knows for sure. Prisoners were sobbing and told us of a dreadful tale. They had been gassed on the way with chlorine. They had been gassed. They're telling about their experience being gassed. Yeah, I'm a little confused. But some survived. Chlorine gas, you're not going to survive. The bodies of the dead were green from the chlorine, and their skin peeled off. Another survivor witness claimed that the victims entered the gas chamber with gas of chlorine and that the bodies were removed by train, exclamation point. They entered the wooden building where the woman's hair was cut and then were asphyxiated with chlorine. After 15 minutes, they had all suffocated. Through a window, it was checked whether they were all dead. Then the floor opened automatically. The corpses fell into the cars of a train passing through the gas chamber and taking the corpses to the oven. Did it even stop, or did they just kind of have to throw them in as it was going by? Mm-hmm. They didn't say. The mainstream historians of Sobibor have rejected the chlorine death gas. Cyclone B, the trapdoors in the gas chambers and the corpse train as inaccurate, or as critics might say, lies, and have instead opted for the exhaust fume option. However, the conflicting nature of the eyewitness accounts on the method of execution has never been resolved and is unlikely ever to be given the myriad conflicting variations on the subject. The most apparent reason for the disparate witness accounts is that they might never have truly been witnesses, but were merely relaying rumors and hearsay, a frequent occurrence that troubles the entire Holocaust narrative because it happened all the time and maybe exclusively. There may not have been actual bona fide witnesses, just repeating rumors. Okay, the official. Here's the official narrative of Sobibor. It's now considered the official narrative as relayed to present-day visitors to the campsite. The first time that Sobibor became an extermination camp was March 42. That's before it was constructed, wasn't it? I'm a little confused. When the first gas chambers were built, allegedly copying the wooden gas chambers already constructed at Belzec. The first experimental gassings were then supposedly conducted in April 42, and thereafter a purported steady stream of victims followed until the summer of that year. Then the wooden gas chambers were just, as in Belzec, replaced by larger ones in brick and concrete. According to the official narrative, the camp was divided into five parts or lagers. The first lager, known as the Vorlager, was supposedly picturesque and consisted of a number of pleasant houses and gardens that housed the German staff. Behind this was allegedly Lager 1, which contained barracks and workshops for prisoners. These workshops included a tailor shop, a carpenter shop, and mechanics, sign printers, and bakery. Adjacent to that was supposedly Lager 2, which housed an administration building, some SS commendations, and it claimed storage facilities for prisoners' luggage, and there were small farm where Jewish prisoners raised livestock and vegetables for the camp's consumption. Beyond its seemingly innocuous purpose, Lager 2 also allegedly contained facilities where prisoners were processed before being sent to the gas chambers, which were located in the third camp, Lager 3. Here it's claimed that Jews were gassed and buried in mass graves, as there were no furnaces or crematory of any kind in Sobibor. Lager 4, also called the Nordlager, was situated some distance away in the woods and used as a munitions depot where prisoners repaired weapons seized from the Soviet Union's armed forces on the Eastern Front. It is Lager 3 that's the focal point of the extermination allegations, as the rest of the camp was, even according to the Holocaust storytellers, an ordinary labor camp. They hate to admit it. According to the storytellers, the extermination process unfolded as follows. Jews arrived by train, were marched to Lager 2, had all their possessions confiscated or compelled to undress. For some reason, they were allegedly separated by gender, and the females had their hair removed. The prisoners were then allegedly led along a narrow pine tree-lined path known as the Himmelstrasse. Himmelstrasse, that's Heavenly Road, which concluded at the doors of the gas chambers, which is claimed were situated in Lager 3. After the prisoners were coerced into the gas chambers, they would be gassed with engine exhaust fumes, and then the Jewish Sonderkommando would be made to extract the corpses and inter them in mass graves, which were supposedly 200 feet long, 50 feet wide, and at least 20 feet deep. I'd like to see how they did that, how they dug 20 feet deep. It is then asserted that the mass graves reached capacity, began to contaminate the air and water, and even reemerged into the open air due to bloating. To address this issue, the Holocaust storytellers assert the Nazis brought an excavator to the camp, exhumed at least 120,000 bodies, and loaded them onto open-air pyres where they were allegedly burned. The bones were then purportedly crushed by hand against stones. It's further claimed that the Jews organized an uprising in the camp in October 43, during which 11 SS men perished and 300 Jews fled. And after this uprising, the camp was allegedly shut down. Now, let's challenge this. The impossibility of the mass murder gassing process at Sobibor. The key upon which the entire mass murder allegation at Sobibor rests is the gas chamber allegations, as both sets of alleged gas chambers at Sobibor were supposedly replicas of those at Belzec. The same reasons why the latter would not have worked also apply to Sobibor. The wooden gas chambers would not have been airtight. And the book by Vitzak Arad, most frequently cited official history of Sobibor. He's an Israeli historian. In his book, he republished a significant portion of Gerstein's statements. We've talked about Gerstein before. The problem is, between Gerstein and other sources, there were conflicting testimony. That's going to be a real problem when you're trying to corroborate it. It conflicts with several other descriptions regarding the size and number of the gas chambers, several other pieces of information, and also several other accounts. One of the most implausible witness posits that hammers were employed to shatter bones on the ground. The remarkable nature of this claim, I thought it was stones, becomes even more astounding when considering that the official account estimates that at least 200,000 people perished at Sobibor. Teeth and bones do not incinerate completely, even in standard crematoria, let alone in open fires. To suggest that the teeth and bones of 200,000 individuals could be ground down using handheld hammers defies credulity. Official documents show Sobibor's true function, and the true function of Sobibor, it's helpful to have these documents. Heinrich Himmler dispatched a personal directive to a number of high-ranking SS leaders. In this directive, Himmler ordered that the Sobibor transit camp in Lublin district to be transformed into a concentration camp. A center for dismantling captured ammunition to be established in the concentration camp. That was, again, admitted as the latter part. Any captured weapons would have been dismantled. Oswald Pohl, Himmler, Pohl conveyed that a facility for disassembling captured Soviet ammunition could be inaugurated at Sobibor without necessitating its conversion into a concentration camp. Sobibor could, according to Pohl, continue to function as a transit camp with a specialized section for dismantling ammunition. So it was. That sounds more like German effectiveness. Indeed, the sole existing documentation purporting that Sobibor served as an extermination camp is the infamous and manifestly false Gerstein statements, which we've talked about before. There's no aerial photography that show gas chambers. The Sobibor trials and Fuchs confession. And it wasn't until 1965 that the commandant of the forced labor camp at Sobibor, Karl Frenzel, was arrested and put on trial in Germany for his role at the camp. And like all similar trials, his only real defense was not to claim that murders had not occurred, but rather to deny any involvement with him. He was, in fact, responsible for organizing the labor sections of the camp, a detail that further underscores the original purpose of the camp. Despite his denials and the complete absence of any evidence, Frenzel was convicted on 46 counts of murder and participation in a further 250,000 counts of murder. This was the number of victims claimed in the 1960s. The numbers just keep going up. That figure has been revised in official accounts since then. He was released in 82 and passed away in 96. And another defendant had overseen the guards, accused of running the gas chambers. He was arrested, and he appeared in court. He took his own life before the conclusion of the trial. This is Bolander. And then Eric Fuchs was accused of constructing the gas chambers at Belzig, Sobibor, and Treblinka. It's clear that he gave his confession and cooperation, in air quotes, in return for the promise of a lighter sentence, an option that would be attractive to anyone except those of the strongest willpower. The fact that his claims are all physically impossible and are disproven by the facts on the site are irrelevant to him. The court had already accepted the outrageous claims as fact, and a denial would achieve nothing. However, a confession would allow him to escape severe punishment for the murder of hundreds of thousands of people, and it is evident that his statement, which largely echoed the wild claims of the Gerstein statements, was his personal means of avoiding a life sentence at the very least. The deputy commander of Sobibor, Gustav Franz Wagner, was arrested in Brazil and sent to Brazil in 78 under an extradition request from the West Germany. He stated that extermination narrative was baseless and that Sobibor had functioned solely as a work camp. He was not pressured into a false confession. Wagner, akin to Auschwitz Commandant Richard Baer, became the second senior Nazi camp commander to refute the existence of an extermination program and meet an untimely and convenient demise. A person who's telling the truth and refused to bend, it becomes dangerous, like Jim says, and he repeats, dead men tell no tales. They don't tell the truth either. Archaeological digs failed to find Sobibor gas chambers. Hate it when that happens. The absolute absence of any confirming evidence underscored of gas chambers and extermination camp, underscored by media reports that cautiously mentioned in their coverage that the archaeological team had unearthed what they thought were the gas chambers, what they thought. But the same Reuters article provided another instance of how the Holocaust narrative continually evolved. It stated the prisoners were killed in 15 minutes with carbon monoxide gas, and incredibly that the Germans kept geese to mask the screams of the dying from other prisoners. Other ridiculous claims that they couldn't support, so they made things up. Nothing we discovered actually proved the existence of gas chambers, despite the belief that they had been found. And Sobibor was an actual camp listed in the 1942 phone book, which I guess that's a kind of a proof. Now, the conclusion regarding Sobibor: there is no documentary evidence for the existence of gas chambers or mass murders. The only evidence consists of a handful of easily discredited and highly contradictory eyewitness statements and German confessions with nothing else to support them. The physical evidence on the site has failed to provide any physical evidence of mass murder. The claim that 200,000 or more bodies were all burned in the open air on pyres and that the bones were then ground up with hammers by hand is not substantiated. Once again, there's no physical evidence on the site to support these claims. The few genuine documents that refer to the camp make it clear that it was established as a forced labor center to repair munitions and provide other services. German documents also confirm that there was indeed an uprising at the camp in October 43, and that this was not the reason for the closure of the camp. Sobibor was closed only when the Soviet army approached in 1944 and Germans withdrew to the west. Boom.
You done?
Done.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm going to see if I can get Diana to bring up something.
Okay.
If she can bring up the commercial for Sobibor.
The Escape from Sobibor, the movie?
Bring up, if you could go Escape from Sobibor, you got to come up with the video they show as the commercial for the movie. And it's kind of funny when you think about it, if you watch it. I always like seeing how they put these movies into context. But anyway, Rutger Hauer, I guess that's his name. He was the big guy in it, the big star in it. I don't know if you could find it or what. But anyway, I remember seeing that movie. And, you know, you're watching the movie and you think, so there it is, Escape from Sobibor. You know, it's like a big deal. Like, let's see what it says. It does.
Herzlich willkommen im Lager Sobibor. Seid begrüßt in so wie Lager.
Hier könnt ihr gewissenhaft arbeiten und in Würde leben. Bis zur Umsiedlung in die vom Reich befreiten Länder. Keine Sorge.
Sie stellen uns zwischen Märchen und Freuden in der Wahl.
Aus hygienischen Gründen ist es notwendig, eine Dusche zu nehmen.
Look at me!
Oh, look at this guy. Unbelievable. All right, that looked like a different movie than the other one. Because there's one with Rutger Hauer. Okay, that's the one.
Him. That's the one.
Well, that's the whole movie, right? Well, we don't want to watch that. But
No, that's right.
I don't know if there was two separate movies or not.
I've only heard of one.
Yeah, but you can see how when you're watching these commercials, and it looks all so real. They're talking about a gas chamber, and they show, you know, there's nothing true about what happened in that movie there. It's all complete nonsense. But again, you make a movie and you put it out there, and people watch it.
They think it's a documentary. They think it's true.
Right. Yeah.
Well, again, action-adventure hero Rutger Hauer stars in an incredible true tale of courage and triumph.
Those of you who survive, bear witness. Let the world know what has happened here.
Escape from Sobibor.
You have arrived at Sobibor. This is a labor camp. If you do your jobs, you will have nothing to fear.
During the Nazi rule, the most secret and brutal camp of all was Sobibor.
This is a death camp. Every day a train comes. All the people, everyone who goes to the showers is dead. Men, women, children, everyone. They survive for a reason. Someday we will have.
It is here that one man devised the most daring escape of World War II.
Can you make knives in your shop? How many? As many as you can make, starting now.
We cannot leave hundreds behind to be slaughtered. Therefore, the escape we plan must be for every prisoner in Sobibor.
God is with you! Now let nothing stop you!
Rutger Hauer of Blood of Heroes and Blind Fury.
Most of the SS are dead! It's everyone for himself now.
Joanna Pakula of Marked for Death. Alan Arkin of Coupe de Ville and Catch 22.
There's no turning back now.
Escape from Sobibor. The story the Nazis could not hide.
That's right, because it didn't happen.
No,
it was real.
Everything.
It was real in my mind, Dorian.
Yeah,
that's right. Everything is, you know, particularly with what we just read is pretty boring. So they had to really ramp it up.
Oh, my goodness. Again, you had Sobibor, Treblinka, and Belzec. Okay, those are the main camps around there. And they all have the same story of what happened.
That's right.
They had the gas chambers. Some kind of get into fancy things that happen with these gas chambers. Some of them say where they were electrocuted. The people were electrocuted in Belzec on a plate on the floor.
Yeah.
Again, people are going to believe. They're not going to believe anyone that tells the true story. They're just not going to believe it.
That's right.
So anyway, that's why we're going over the book, because we're trying to show people that it's complete nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And, people have to understand this. So now I had a fellow last night. He actually emailed me, and, he's saying to me basically, well, you know, I got some information here that really shows that the Holocaust happened. And he's bringing in the Einsatzgruppen, which were a group of soldiers, that actually went into towns and cities before the army got there. They made sure that the army could come into the town without being harassed by the partisans. And so they would go looking for all these partisans and shoot them and kill them, because that's what you had to do. All right. And they make a big deal about the Eisengruppen and killing these people. Remember, these people were partisans. They were not part of the military. And if you were fighting a war without being part of the military, then you're called a partisan. Mm-hmm. And if you were caught, you were shot right on the spot. So we don't deny. I don't deny. They don't deny that the Eisengruppen probably killed thousands of people, of whoever they were, Jews, Poles, whatever the hell they were. Okay, yeah,
mostly in Russia, but they did not. They it was not millions.
Right. Right. But again, that was their job. They had perfect right to do that. So that's the Eisengruppen question the guy brought in. Then he brought in something about Himmler talking about gas chambers or whatever. And I just said, look at pal, here's the deal.
Yeah.
None of this stuff matters at this point because we're talking about 6 million Jews primarily. That's what they're saying. But whatever. 6 million people, whether they're Jews or anybody else, were killed. That's what they claim. 6 million were killed in gas chambers. Mostly in gas chambers. But there's only one problem. There were no gas chambers. That's all I said to him. I said, you got to show me there's a murder weapon. And the only country that had gas chambers that killed people was the United States. So you want to believe that Germany and Europe had gas chambers to kill people. And understand this, the gas chambers that the United States had and used to, you know, kill people, prisoners, the United States, all right, only held one or two people. The gas chambers that they're talking about were supposedly holding 2,000 or 3,000 people.
That's right.
That is one big gas chamber, okay? Yeah. And it had, you know, again, look up the United States, you're going to see a gas chamber from the United States. Now, look in Germany or where are the other camps they claim that these things happen. And you show me any building resembling a building like that, because the United States had the only gas chambers. And if they were going to use gas chambers, it would have to be exactly like the one the United States used. But guess what? No. And I told the guy, I even said to the guy, I will give you $1,000 if you can show me a real gas chamber that was used to execute people in, all right, and that could hold 2,000 or 3,000 people. I want to see a picture of that gas chamber. All right.
Your money's safe, Jim, because it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It never did.
See what happens. What happens with the topic, Vinny? Do you have something you want to say? I didn't want to interrupt you.
Oh no. I just chimed in.
You said
on
your
that.
Money was safe.
Because the whole thing is ridiculous. It's wooden doors on these chambers, right? They were delousing chambers where they used to clean their clothes to save them. They called Dr. Mengele the angel of death. They called him that because he was saving lives, not killing them.
Right. That's right.
Right. So the thing is, people, they get into all the stuff about the war and the Germans and who said this, who said that. I said to them basically also, I said, look, I don't care what eyewitness testimony said. I don't care even what Hitler said. I don't care what Himmler said or anybody said about gassings or whatever. There were no gas chambers. Okay, so, I mean, they could say whatever they want. Or you could say they said this, because a lot of times they didn't say it, but they want you to believe they said it. Okay, so that's the situation. There. Anyway, what happened there? And I want to make the point about Kurt Gerstein. The guy was really not there. All them, you know, his brain was fried or something, because he said things that he said, believe it or not, Gerstein, and they used his testimony and they still use it today, that he said 20 to 25 million people were gassed. That's what he said. He said, you know, he said things that were just completely nonsense, and they knew it was nonsense. They knew it, and that's why they didn't use his information later, because this guy's out of his mind. The things he's saying, he's out of his mind. And then he was talking about kids being killed and how they were killed and, just crazy stuff. He eventually, they claim, he committed suicide. Now, that might be true. I don't know, all right? But he wasn't all there. okay, they knew he wasn't all there. That's why they don't really want to talk about Gerstein today, because he just said things that, I mean, if you get in all, I mean, 20 to 25 million people were gassed. I mean, him talking about that, this nonsense, it's complete nonsense. So again, when you're dealing with this, you know, the Holocaust, folks, just don't get into all the bullshit. She said, he said, the Germans said, everybody said this. They admitted they did this. Okay, let's say everybody did say that. And they're writing it all down, and they said that. And they said there were gas chambers, and they said all that. There were no gas chambers. Okay, so well, you don't have a case. If you can't find the murder weapon, then that's it. Case closed. We don't have a murder weapon. How these people died. Yeah, some died. We're not denying people died. I explained to you about the Einsatzgruppen. The Einsatzgruppen did kill partisans. That was their job. Because these partisans, you know what they said? They said these partisans that were dressed, you know, they were just normal people with guns, women, men, whatever. They said they kill up to 500,000 German soldiers. Can you imagine?
That's the problem.
That's a big problem, folks. Yeah. And you're going to tell me that these Einsatzgruppen, again, there was only, I've heard probably maybe 6,000 to 9,000 of these groups of soldiers. That was it. That was all there was. Six, you know, whatever. You know, under 10,000 of them. And they had to go all around everywhere to make sure everything was right. No, didn't happen. Okay, well, anyway, we're going to continue on next week on the book, and hopefully we'll go from there. Today, we're going to continue on with Henry. Henry is our expert there in Michigan because he does a standout over there. Hi, Henry. How you doing?
Hi, guys. How are you doing? I'm a self-described street urchin. That's what I am. I don't aspire to be a scholar, an author, an expert, anything like that. I just do what we do every week, week in, week out.
And that's right.
And so we don't particularly react to anything the Jewish state is doing. What did I write? I noticed today, and you probably did too, when you get your Holohoax notifications, that a cartoon is coming out called The Most Precious Cargo. Did you guys are aware of that? Well, as far as I can see, it was reviewed in Variety magazine or something like that. It's a cartoon about the Holocaust, you know. So it's you know, it's another Art
Steven Spielberg.
No, the guy who did the cartoon book.
Art Mouse, right? He did the Mouse.
Mouse. Yeah, that's the one. So anyhow, there. You know, my friends in London don't believe me that, you know, that the biggest weapon in the Jewish power arsenal is the Holocaust.
That's right.
They keep proving it. They keep telling us. Telling us this is our. There you go. This is our Achilles heel. You know, please don't bite us there. Well, that's exactly.
So, how long is this? Is it a cartoon? Like, how long is it?
We can both learn here from this thing that's on the screen now. That's all I know about it. I didn't do any in depth at all. I just got a notification from Google alerts. It says this is what is happening in the Holocaust world today, and so that's. Wow. You know, that's what they're dipping down to. They have to make cartoons.
They got to reach the kids. And, of course, everything that's in cartoon, the kids are going to believe, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Peter Pan.
That has to be true. I saw it.
My story on that was that I was just a little kid, and I'm not that much different now than I was as a little kid, but my aunt took me to see Old Yeller.
Oh,
did you guys see Old Yeller?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I saw. My mother brought me to see that. I cried. It was sad.
I cried so much that my aunt waited another 2 hours for them to play it again, and took me into the movie. You know, we just sat she was consoling me for 2 hours in the lobby.
Wow.
And we went back into the movie and said, see, he's okay.
Oh.
And then she took me out of there.
So. Okay, yeah.
You know what movie? You know what movie was really traumatic for me when I was a kid? And again, my mother took us to this movie, was Bambi. Do you remember Bambi?
I don't remember Bambi.
You didn't see Bambi? Okay.
I probably did.
Bambi? Bambi was really sad. You know, the deer. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to look at Bambi. That, I mean, I was a little kid, and that honestly, I mean, for me to remember it now, that was a traumatic thing. For a little kid to go to see a movie like that, you know, and Bambi, no, what happened is Bambi's mother died.
Shot. Yeah.
The mother got shot.
By a bad old white hunter, right? A bad old white hunter killed Bambi's mother.
Yes, right, probably.
Probably, but he was raised by his dad.
So that was probably, I would say that was in the 60s, you know.
I think so.
Early 60s, probably, when I went to see that movie.
Yeah.
You know? Uh-huh. But anyway, okay, Henry, well, enough for movies that make us cry. Let's get into Jews that make us cry. So what's going on with you?
I like to think that we make Jews cry.
That is a good twist.
We can hope for the best. The I think last week, today I thought was a red letter day, and maybe you won't appreciate it, and maybe you will, but the I reported last week we had this big, muscular black guy come up to us.
You filmed it, yes.
We put it on BitChute, and I showed it to you. And today, you know, I was concerned about today. I didn't, you know, I'm not international, I'm not black, and I'm not a fighter. So the cards were going to be stacked against me if this guy shows up with his group of people. So I went to the vigil a little bit early. And, you know, the synagogue has two security guards. And I knew one of the guys, the older one, was named Ed. So I called to him because I have to, you know, I have to stay on the sidewalk. I can't walk onto the synagogue property because that would get people nervous. And he came over, and this was the first time he and I had a conversation. And it was a very good conversation. Because he's concerned about people like that. I showed him the video, and he said, here's my card. We exchanged cards, so we now have each other's contact information. And he wants to see that video. I showed it to him on my cell phone, but he wanted his own copy, and I did that. And so, you know, we came away with like it's like a boy named Sue. You know, we came away with a different point of view, and it was like a mutual admiration society. He wants to keep people secure and safe, and I want to keep people secure and safe. Yeah, I said, I don't want harm to come to these people. I don't want harm to come to anybody. You know, that's what people don't understand about us haters. You know, they don't get that. But he got it, and he's a private detective or a personal security guy, but he turns out to be a nice guy. And then we had another lurker, and I have some videos of this guy that drives by and gives us some shit. And this week we brought our own black guy. It was a surprise to me. Donald, our longtime vigiler, he's a he's a guy of the streets, and he manages sometimes. So this time he got himself on the bus to come out to visit us. And, of course, Donald being Donald, he got off at the wrong stop, and he had to walk half a mile to get to us. But he did, limped along, and he's a wonderful guy. I don't have to say I think he's a wonderful guy. I know he is. And so if I can – I wanted to see if I can get these – links to the chat thing.
Yeah.
And then
Diana can pick them up if you put them in there.
Pick it up there. See if she can make out those things. There are two of them of the same guy, one inside his car and one outside his car. So I don't know if she can rev that up at this point or not. But he, you know, I always ask people if they have any questions. And I try to approach, and you know, and Chris does too. We always approach people openly and honestly. If she wants to start that, I can talk it through. Guy in the blue hoodie is Donald, my friend. And here comes the guy.
You have any questions?
What?
Do you have any questions?
No, I'm good. You're
good? What's your name?
Tony Bag of Donuts.
What, you're scared to say who you are?
I'm good, thank you.
Yeah. Coward. What you is.
The Donald calls him a coward, and that's what he is. And then he backs in, and he's now taking more photos of us. You know, this intimidation doesn't work. There's Donald going back to my car. We're packing up at this point in the vigil. So he's collecting the flags, American flags. It was Memorial Day weekend. I carried my Remember the USS Liberty sign, and and Chris and I both wore our USS Liberty T-shirts. I bought an extra 8 flags to stick in the ground to commemorate the holiday and be sad about memorializing, or if that's the word. I said I was a street urchin. I didn't say I was a professor. So he's you know, so we did our bit today. And then the second video is this is the guy walking.
Do you have any questions?
Well, maybe I need a better welcoming line than, do you have any questions? Because when he was calling, I don't know if he was calling the cops. If he was, he was disappointed because they don't show.
Yeah.
When somebody calls and says, hey, there's a couple of guys out here carrying signs. And it's just, where have you been for the last 20
years? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, yeah. So wake up.
That's, calling the ADL. Hello. This is an anti-Semitic report. My only hope, or my only fear now, is that since Ed, the security guard, was talking to me, I hope he doesn't lose his job. Mm. You know. And I hope he can explain that you know, we are both concerned with maintaining the peace.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm thinking, Henry, that Ed is aware of a situation, and you can possibly help him with that footage, because it seems that he might be out of control. He might be doing things to people, you know, that he shouldn't be doing. You know, yeah. I can only imagine why Ed is actually interested in talking to you. So well,
it's a win-win here for us. I think that you know, I mean, it's just a matter of communications. I think, you know, I learned a long time ago, cops are humans. If you put a cop into an uncertain situation, he may act in a weird manner if you let him know what's going on. And certainly Ed is aware, even though he's only been on the scene for 3 years, I think, he knows who we are. I said to him, Ed, you know I'm not a threat to you. And he said, of course not. And so it was like, you know, so to me, it was a good day. I mean, that was something that was made. The carnage continues in Palestine. The International Court made a ruling or a judgment. Of course, Israel just gives them the finger and says, we're going to do what we want because we have a supremacist ideology. Mm-hmm. And we're just not going to, you know, they're gangsters. It's just complete. That's how gangsters operate.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So you try to reason, you try to control, you try to live with them, and there is just no living with them. And that's why I wouldn't ever support a one-state, quote, solution, because I think the final solution is to get the Jews out of Palestine and get them out of Washington, D.C. as well. Good luck with that, but that is a peaceful solution. No matter. So, you got a video of the cartoon?
Yeah, she does. It must be a trailer. What are you doing?
Brings a tear to your eye, huh?
Well, it's supposed to.
That's the commercial for the cartoon, or
yeah. That's a. I don't know if it's a trailer. I mean, there. All it is a snippet. Precious Cargo, obviously trailer. So I thought, are babies. They're playing along the lines of these other movies that have come out about child trafficking, not realizing that aside from the United States, Israel's one of the biggest child traffickers in the world.
We probably learned that they're at their feet. The only difference if they made a real movie would be Palestinian mothers holding babies, except the babies wouldn't have any arms or legs because they've been blown off, in 2,000-pound bombs on an area the size of Philadelphia. That's the storyline, baby thrown from train. Yeah.
I guess.
Well, geez. Yeah, then the evil Nazis just, they just. It's good when you own the mighty Wurlitzer, you can spin it any way you want.
There you go. That's exactly right. Well,
anyway, Henry, Diane is coming out there next week, she said. Right, Diane?
Yes, that's the plan, Lord willing. And once I am in the vicinity, I will make contact with you, Henry.
Okay.
To find out what you want to do. I've got to find out what needs to be done, whether I would be taken halfway to meet with you or what I would need to, what needs to be. So I won't know until I get there.
Okay. And what day do you think you're going to arrive? Do you know? I mean, I can put you my phone number. Do you have my phone number?
I believe so. I don't particularly want to do that right now, but I can send it to you with the particulars on
text. Do that, text me or email me, and
I have your phone number. We've been in a phone contact.
We have, haven't we?
Yes, we have. So that
I have a good memory. It's just short.
I hear you.
Some things get by me.
I would imagine Diane's going to be there the day. What do you do there? Just Saturdays?
Saturday.
Okay, Saturday so she'll be there probably Saturday morning, whenever she gets there. I would think, right, Diane?
I would be available for that, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, she'll
be there.
We'll work out the details. Toledo's, Toledo's 50 miles away.
Okay.
So that'll be good. So that's it for me.
Okay, very good.
I'm going to depart.
All right. We hope to have Ryan Masano on shortly. We're going to hear about his situation.
Oh, he's going to be on tonight?
Yeah. I told him to come on around 9. So, I mean, if you want to listen, or you can come back in if you want, whatever. But you know, if you want to talk to him, that's fine. But that's the game plan anyway.
Well, I'd like to have a little FaceTime with him. He seems like an interesting person. So just put me off stage, and I'll just hang around.
You go out and come back in, whatever. We'll get you back in. Okay. I didn't mention, but that fellow that Henry was talking about, Ed, he's probably paid by taxpayer money to be a god there.
Yeah.
Because the temples, they get money from the government, okay, to protect their temples. They get money. All right, I don't know how much they get, but they can put whatever the request is. They can say, you know, we have a security, and they probably got cameras, they got people, and that's all paid for by our money to protect the religion.
And Jim, they're set up soup to nuts with everything, with the works.
That's right. But think about it. They're a religion, okay, and they're getting this money from our government.
Yeah.
But their temple, which is Jewish, they're the only religion that is given protection money.
Imagine that, huh?
How can this be, folks? How can this be? Well, it's very simple, because they know how to get their money, and whatever the hell it is, I mean, if someone ever wanted to look into it, they could probably find out how much money they get, how much Ed gets paid to do his security, because I'm sure they get hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Each temple gets their money.
Oh, sure.
That's the way it works. You know? I mean, think about it. If someone walked into a Catholic church and they bombed the Catholic church, they wouldn't get any money.
No.
They wouldn't get nothing. The government
tough luck.
You find with lawyers for 20 years. Right. A bunch of nonsense.
I just can't believe it. People don't see what these Jews are doing. They just don't see it. And how much money they make sure they get money from any angle they can get for themselves. These people that become the, overseers of the Holocaust museums, the main people that oversee it. Do you know how much they get a year? They get over like $300,000 a year. If you're the manager of that Holocaust museum, they make a ton of money. Can you imagine getting over like $300,000 a year to run the Holocaust Museum? Wherever you are, they all get this much money. They make tons of money because they make sure they got people in position. Now, I'm sure that guy kicks back money to somebody and does something to get that money. Yeah. It's a bit of a joke.
Yeah.
Well, no, you know what really sucks about that? I'm sure they're all Jews that run those museums. I'm sure they're all Jews. You know, in other words, no diversification there. And I don't think there's going to be any black person running one of those museums or any Catholic person. They're all going to be Jews running those museums.
That's right.
That's disgusting. I remember John, our friend John, he had a show. He does a show on the internet. And he said he went to visit the museum, and he went to a whole museum. Okay.
It's John Friend.
Yeah. John Friend. John Friend. So he gets out, he goes to the end, and at the end, there's an old Jew was sitting there at a table with a jar so people can donate money to him. Can you believe it? I mean, this is crazy stuff. You got a Jew there collecting money from the people, and they're probably throwing in money, and this guy walks out of there. You know, every day there's probably maybe a new Jew there that needs some money. You know what I mean? Hey, we're going to put you're going to make a couple hundred bucks today if you sit there. Look sad.
They go right to Katz's and wherever they are, right, and getting themselves a nice pastrami.
I just can't believe it. It's like any place where they can suck money out of you.
They'll suck money out of you.
Nonsense. That's what they do. They suck money out of you. They get us in so many ways how they get our money. And people just don't even know what they're doing. I mean, you know, with the Holocaust music, we're not going to, they're not supposed to get any money from any government agency or any taxpayer money, but they do.
Mm-hmm.
They get it because they you know how they get it? They're, you're going to notice how the name of these Holocaust museums, they're calling them educational centers.
Oh,
you see,
boy.
So now what happens is they can bring in another element, like, for instance, black people or whatever, Indian people or some, you know, indigenous people that have been persecuted. And they got a little corner there now, and now they can get government money and tax money because it's a special Holocaust museum for education. Right, education of people who've been hurt, okay, by, you know, people who are out there oppressing them. Can you imagine?
No, they forgot two letters, though. They forgot two letters. It's re-education, because that's what they're trying to.
Yeah, that's right.
I just can't believe it, that this is going on. I mean, I believe it, but I mean, nobody else really knows how they have their hand in anything they can get money for in. It's probably coming in from a lot of different ways that we don't even know it, because they name things differently, or they bring things into that Holocaust Museum. I know even the Holocaust Museum in Los Angeles, it's not even, I don't even think it's called the Museum of Tolerance, isn't it? The Holocaust Museum in Los Angeles. I don't think it's called the Holocaust Museum, unless it's called the Holocaust Museum of Tolerance. I don't know, but I know it said something about the Museum of Tolerance. And that's how they get away with it, because now they just bring in other people. They give you a little bit, a wall that you can put your stuff on if you're black, if you're, you know, some group of people that have been oppressed or whatever, indigenous people, whatever. And that's it. That's what they do. And now they can call themselves an educational center. They get millions of dollars a year. They pay all the people there, which I'm sure are all Jews. Getting their money, handouts, they, you know, friends of the friends, you know, they get friends there in high places that are able to shovel their money over to them, whatever job they have in that museum. It really sucks. But anyway, okay.
And we all
All right, we're going to take a quick break here, because hopefully Ryan's going to come on at 9. But again, we want to thank Speak Free Radio that we can be on and able to give our 2 cents about things in the world. Hopefully people will appreciate that. Speak Free Radio, if you go there, there's always something on that's playing. So if you ever go to the site, you just have to click on live. You'll always probably hear something going on. So, you know, if you want to watch something or listen to something that's going on there, and you're sick of watching TV or whatever, go to Speak Free Radio and see what's going on live, and you can do that. And now we're going to go to Money Tree Publishing, which is the publishing side of this, which, again, we always encourage people to go to. That's where you get the books.
And the DVD series.
Yeah, all the things that you need, the shop, there you go, moneytreepublishing.com. Then you're going to get into the shop. All the books you want to see there, plus the DVDs, all the books, the most important books, Myth of German Villainy, The 6 Million Factor Fiction is there. And these other ones, I even have a bunch of these other ones myself.
Jews are the problem.
Yeah. A lot of good stuff. Hey, people want to just donate the Money Tree Publishing, they can do that. But you're definitely getting your money's worth if you want to get these books.
DVD series.
Yeah, the DVDs are great, you know, especially, not the Myth of German Villainy, but the one about Adolf Hitler.
Great Story Never Told.
Yeah. Is Europa there? That's up there.
Yes. Oh, Europa's at the top.
Support pro-white businesses, everyone. This is how we beat them.
Well, that's what it is. You know, people, you know, they always get stuff on Amazon. I mean, you know, everybody does. But our books aren't on Amazon. Nothing that we got is on Amazon.
No.
you're not gonna get our books there. So anyway, that's the only place you're going to get the really good books. I don't know what Siege is about, but anyway, I never. It's a new book. I don't know what it's even about, to be honest with you. But anyway, what's it about? Oh, I see. is it inserts? Oh, they're newsletters or something.
Right.
Okay, so it's just a whole bunch of like newsletters from some publication there, or whatever. So you could look into that more too. All right. Okay, so we're up to 9 o'clock, halfway through our show. Got another hour to go, and hopefully we'll get Ryan. Has he come in? Is he into the thing yet? No.
Is he in the green room?
I mean, I can set this up anyway for what's going on here.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Okay, so, why don't we, can we go to my BitChute channel and play the video of Ryan so we can set it up? Yeah, very good.
It's like she knew what you were going to say.
Look at that. Okay, so let's show about Ryan Massano. He's really a truther out there, patriot truther, really standing for the truth, going to these Sacramento City Council meetings, trying to get the message out, and he's doing a good job, except they give him a hard time, folks. He's already
they don't want to hear the truth.
That's right. So he's been arrested so far 2 times. Here's the second time he's going to be arrested. So let's watch the video.
Oh, we should turn it up.
Last meeting in the city of Sacramento, with their interruptions and shutting meetings down, has deprived me of at least 30 minutes to an hour of speaking time in the last year. Last meeting in your most brazen attack on the First Amendment ever, you actually had Assistant City Manager Lainey Milstein stage a panic attack over having Psalms 30.
Excuse me, you cannot talk about, you want to talk about the budget, you talk about the budget. You're not talking about any individual staff member. You want to take your grievance, take it outside.
So if I was arrested right here, I'm going to talk about it right here. That's how that works. You took me out of the meeting last week.
You are not the maker of the rules, mister. You can leave.
You are not the restrictor of citizens' free speech.
Okay,
we haven't learned that yet.
You can speak on the budget. You can speak on the budget. Otherwise, you're going to be ruled out of order. Speak on the budget. What's your view on the budget? For it, against it, for the restorations, against the restorations? Your moment. Go ahead.
We have a problem with Jewish supremacy, and I need to address that.
I am a father of a Nazi!
So I'm not a Nazi. I've already said it.
Oh, Ryan, look at you driving your car. We're playing your video right now.
Hey, Ryan.
Hello.
I don't know what's going on. Well, we lost your video. Something happened. I don't know. Okay, so Ryan, you're with us. How you doing?
Good. Doing good. Just finished up a couple hours of a show and got a haircut, and so now I'm kind of in the home stretch of the evening, getting ready for next Tuesday. Is going to be really exciting because they're doing two proclamations on, ironically, Pride Month and Jewish Heritage Month, all on the same evening.
Wow.
Okay, so we talked about your first arrest. I remember we went over that, but the second one was kind of interesting because, well, first of all, your first arrest, you went to court and you were on one side defending yourself all by yourself. And can you explain who was there on their end trying to get you to go to jail here? I mean, who was there representing them?
Yeah, so they had the one who brought the charges, Assistant City Manager Lynn Milstein, who was making $270,000 a year in 2019, and she's making $370,000 a year in 2022. She's probably making over $400,000 a year right now. So she's the one that brought the charges against me, and she was there. And also there was the police officer, Officer McPhail, who is in charge of like clearing me out of the chambers, which he did. And then there was the city attorney. His name is Bo. It's I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correct. It's B-E-A-U, Bo Parker. I don't know if he's Jewish or not, but he sure did belt out, he's an anti-Semite, pretty natural enough. And then there was another attorney who was unidentified. I didn't know his name, but he was kind of like a lead attorney. And then there was Peter Coletto, who is the director of finance in Sacramento. He was there to testify. His actual, out of the three testimonies, Peter Coletto's was actually the closest to the facts of any of them, which is no offense to any of the women listening, but the women, just their emotions just took them over and they started making stuff up. He stuck to the actual facts as best as he could, though he still had some kind of bias. So yeah, they had basically five employees, and I did the math, and if Lainey Milstein gets a month of vacation, she's getting paid around $190 an hour. And if everyone else is getting like $50 to $100, that's like $10,000 to $30,000 of Sacramento's money they just wasted on that.
Wow. And that's the whole point of you complaining. You're trying to show them they're wasting their money on you.
Right. It does have to do with the budget. You're wasting money on frivolous lawsuits, and he kicked me out before I could even finish. You're going to have me arrested again.
Okay, so tell us about that. Okay, the second time, I don't know why the video didn't finish playing, but anyway, so you're there talking about was this after the whole meeting? Because I noticed that, you know, some places you could speak in the beginning, some places you got to speak at the end, or you could speak on the topic that's being discussed at the time. So when did you come into the conversation?
So this meeting, they have matters not on the agenda, which I typically always speak on, and that was I had a card in for that. But there was two other items, which I always examine it to see is there as many items as I can to get up and speak on. Also, like this whole proclamation for Pride Month and proclamation for Jewish Heritage Month, they do those and they don't let you speak on that, which is totally bogus. But on this particular occasion, I had three cards in, and so I actually spoke one time before then, and I went for 2 minutes, and I would finish my remarks, which I got out some pretty good ones on that one, and then this was the second time, and I actually had a third card, which never got around to, so, this was the second time. They had 60 speakers on this particular item, and they brought the meeting to a halt when I got up there.
Wow. Okay, so basically, here you are talking about your finances because they're wasting their money on you. And now, okay, so now explain how they arrested you. So explain what happened there.
So I began speaking about Lainey Milstein, and then of all members of the board, the one that you would expect, Lisa Kaplan, she pipes up that, oh, we're not allowed to speak about city employees. So they have a couple games they play. Number one, if you criticize one council member, others will jump up in solidarity. This is a favorite word of theirs. It's communists use it all the time. Mm-hmm. And they'll jump in and say, you have to talk to all members of the board, please. You can't just address one member. They do the same thing if you talk about their employees. They always defend each other. And they have people in the audience. You probably heard the man shout out, Ryan, yeah.
That you're a
Nazi. That guy, he's interrupted meetings before. His name is Keon Bliss. He is a paid employee of the city of Sacramento. He oversees this loudmouth who can't have self-control to keep himself quiet in a meeting. He oversees Sacramento's police, and he's paid to do this.
Okay. All right.
Oh, hi. Hello, Henry. I've heard so many good things about you.
And vice versa.
Being on the same show as you.
Ryan, yeah. It's good to see you. Hold on a second. Let me shout. Margo, Ryan's on. My wife wanted to see you too. So she can pull herself away from the living room activity she's doing. My thing is I never really address the council people by name in my town. I just get up it's interesting because they talk about items. You can address council on items of municipal interest. And I thought here, I'm pretty sure you have mandatory Holocaust education in California. And we have mandatory Holocaust education here. When you read the stuff, they're teaching them the wrong stuff.
Okay.
So I think it's of a strong municipal interest that someone gets up and corrects what our students are being taught. And, of course, they don't pay any attention to me. Interestingly enough, my former friends address council, And they call them out by names, and they call them names. You know, they've called the mayor a dog, and they've called this person, she contributes to Friends of the IDF, and it's, and I never take that tack, but interestingly enough, since my topic I talk about is the forbidden Holocaust, they turn their backs on me. They literally spin in their chairs and turn their backs, and some leave the room. And
one of them is a Jew.
And one of them is a Jew anymore? I thought they're all non-Jews now. But
no, I mean, Wurzka.
One of the speakers is a Jew. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he never uses the J word. So we're not friends anymore, those people. And so, when I speak, and I just speak like once every other month, but I am, I guess I am afraid of being arrested. And maybe you're not, maybe because you're younger than I am. But, good on you, I say, if you do that.
I figure, if America's founders were willing to die for liberty, then going to jail, which I don't recommend it, sleeping on a wooden bench. I got 2 hours of sleep both of the nights. It was not good. Plus, you have no idea who you're going to end up with, and it's pretty unmonitored, which just you're in a room with people who may be mentally deranged, and you're just stuck in there.
Like the city council.
Yeah, but I thought it was ironic because I actually had better conversations and better relationships with those prisoners who were like contrite and admitted they were wrong than the city council, who cannot admit they're wrong and are the biggest criminals in the city.
There you go. There you go.
Boom. You can't.
So, Ryan, tell us what happened. What happened? Because I never heard the whole story. So you're there, and now you're fighting with the mayor. The mayor's giving you a hard time, and he says, we're gonna have you arrested or whatever. And so explain to me how that happened.
So, he was basically kind of giving me an option to kind of change course, which by that time I was like, you had me arrested right here. Now you're going to try and tell me that I can't talk about you arresting. That's not going to happen. So then they took a 10-minute recess. So I'm basically standing up there for 10 minutes while the room, who had about 100 to 200 people, they're just kind of, where I was 5 years ago, not really knowing what's going on. And then Keon Bliss, this paid activist, he's like, no, I'm not talking to you about with you at all, not seeing all this stuff. Then 10 minutes pass, they come back in the room, they say, okay, we're going to have the police arrest Mr. Masano, take me out, and then we'll reconvene and everybody, the media will go on as normal. So that's pretty much what happened. I had a couple friends who got up there and spoke, but it's kind of disturbing that this lack of knowledge of the Constitution and American history, and you got millions of Americans that just sit there and watch this stuff and think, oh, that's just totally normal. They're just trampling all over its First Amendment rights, and this is just another day at the park. They don't realize that they're coming for your First Amendment rights next.
This is a tragedy that they just sit there and watch, isn't it, Ryan? I mean, it's just amazing.
It is.
They just sit there and watch it happen. They go, oh, it'll never happen to me. When are they going to wake up,
Ryan, what were you charged with?
They charged me with disturbing the peace at a public assembly, and I had a whopping bail of $0.
Okay.
Excellent.
That's good.
Any restraining order on this second arrest?
No, the restraining order was done away with already, and obviously she wasn't that afraid because she sat just 3 feet ahead of me at this meeting, so she couldn't have been too terrified.
Right, so they didn't attempt to do that on the second arrest.
Right, yeah, no, they didn't do the restraining order. That was their first trick. This trick was off the subject matter, so we'll see. They have a lot of tricks, I tell you what. And when it comes to tricks they pull out of their bag, there's no way to surprise them.
No end. You got that right, brother.
Okay, so you're gonna go back next week, right? This week?
Yeah, this about 3 days, and Tuesday I'll be back.
Okay, so you'll be back, and the same thing's probably going to happen again, right? They're going to arrest you again.
They'll probably try. I'm getting better at it now, though, because this time I won't bring cash with me because they always put the cash on a MasterCard, which that shows you who runs the jails. I was like, I don't want my cash on a MasterCard. Mm-hmm. But so I won't be bringing cash in with me this time. And a couple other, I'll probably dress a little warmer because they turned that air conditioning on, and it's really cold in there. But yeah, and then the food is like, I mean, slightly better than gruel. And of course, on the walls of the jail cell is the United Nations foreign consulate. And all these foreign consulates' address or phone numbers are on the wall, which tells you that a lot of criminals are from foreign nations. That's what they're telling you. So, yeah, it's pretty astonishing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're just going to keep up the tricks. But, of course, I'm sure you're looking at this from a legal aspect, what you're going to do, right? Somehow or whatever.
Yeah, you know, there was a friend of mine from Southern California. He just sent me a check to help out with the legal bills, and I really appreciate that. I've tried for the longest to, like, try to do this solo because, you know, the founders, they're pretty self-sufficient, although their money wasn't controlled by the Federal Reserve like the Jews do us today. But I've tried to be pretty self-independent, but we'll see. I'm trying to finish this lawsuit off, file it. I got to watch that video you sent me about Jack and Margie Flynn.
Yeah.
But that was really appreciated. And I think, you know, a lot of this, if we could kind of get movements going in cities, because until they get 5, 50, 100 people getting arrested, these city councils, I really don't think they're going to take it seriously.
Right. But
then,
go ahead, man. Okay, someone can talk.
Margo was just saying that it's, you know, they're going to just slice off our First Amendment rights.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. That, you know, it was an excellent comeback you had a week ago or whenever that you said, when he said, you don't make the rules. Who was that guy? Is that the mayor?
That's Mayor Steinberg.
That's the mayor, right?
And he's a Jewish guy? Is he a Jew? Because his whole mannerisms were Jews. Like, you're not going to make the rules. And you came back with, you're not going to be the arbiter of First Amendment rights.
Restrictor of rights, yeah.
Yeah. And I say bully for you. That was top notch. I really appreciated that. I wish I could think on my feet as fast as you. But I'm learning. So, you know.
So now you're going to have to go to court on that charge.
Yeah, so I got two court dates, one for the arrest, one's like on August 5th, and one's on August 12th for this latest one. So I got to go resolve those.
Wow. So they're just going to try to tie you up, you know, hoping that you're going to give up.
Yeah.
And, of course, if you go next week, again, I see, people don't understand that mayor has to be sued individually. That's what's going to happen to him, you know, individually.
Yeah, I was wondering with someone with expertise could kind of comment on this, because I wanted to sue Sacramento, all the city council members, Laney Milstein, the Sacramento Bee for lying, the television stations for lying,
Hey, Ryan, it's good I'm here, because let me tell you, there's something called a surety bond that they're all bound to, that you can collect on. I'll have a video up tomorrow for you. All right.
Okay.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah, you got a case there. Boy, you got a case there.
Mm-hmm.
Conspiracy also. You're dealing with a conspiracy. I mean, this is huge.
Everybody's involved.
And the cops are even involved. You can even go after the cops.
I'm going to hop in here.
Okay, Diana, go ahead.
Hey, Ryan, it's Diana.
Hey.
You can file what's called a Section 1983 lawsuit. I don't know if somebody already told you that. And it's different from state to state. So it's a lawsuit that you can seek. I put it up here, financial compensation for violations of your constitutional rights by state and local government officials, such as police officers, city councilors. So you look into that in California, and I don't know the laws or the rules in California, whether or not you would file something like this in Superior Court or you would file it in federal court. But it is something that you could probably do on your own. In Massachusetts, sometimes you have to actually send a notice to the city officials that you're going to sue them before you can sue them. So you should find out if that applies. And then you can list each one of these people in the lawsuit. But you just have to make sure that you have claims that they can be held accountable for, or it's going to get thrown out. Yeah. So
yeah, and I need to do some research because Vallejo, Sonoma, I don't know to include all of them in one lawsuit, do separate lawsuits, and Vallejo goes back to 2018, so almost like 6 years ago. So I want to kind of, you know, this is new for me, so, and I know I don't want to get it thrown out, so I need to make sure that it's done right the first time.
Well, the thing is, if there's probably a statute of limitations, so if it's something that's 6 years ago, it's hard to know if you can still do that. But the thing is, and I don't know if it's different in California, but every time you file a lawsuit, you actually have to pay a filing fee. So, like, for example, if you file a lawsuit in Superior Court in Massachusetts with multiple defendants, you have to pay a separate filing fee for each one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you file in federal court, then it's generally one flat fee and you can have multiple defendants, multiple plaintiffs. But more costs come into play when you go to serve these lawsuits. So if you have five defendants, you have to serve five, you have to serve it to five different people. You're going to have to pay a constable or a sheriff, you know, maybe $100 each to get that, to get them served, right? And everything has to be done in a timely fashion. So there are a lot of nuances to filing a lawsuit that you should get your ducks in a row before you start filing, because then you're going to be under the gun and not know what to do. So
yeah, that's what I wanted. I wanted to completely research this. I have delayed a lot, but I mean, we're getting more evidence, and I don't want to do this recklessly or rashly at all. It needs to be carefully thought out, and and go from there. Because it's if it gets thrown out, it's going to really hurt the effort, because these people are just like, they have no shame about just arresting and just doing whatever they very well please. They're all puppets and they're all connected. I think that's the fascinating thing about this, is it shows that there's connections between all these city councils. They're all puppets. You know, they're all vetted. They're all trained. And understanding that, I think, is crucial to fixing this, because this isn't just Sacramento. Sacramento is just the wasp nest for California. And all these big Democrat cities are all the same. They have the League of Cities. They all get together to discuss their little communist tactics. Mm-hmm. It's what happens in Sacramento, they love to say it. The Democrats love to say it, and the Republicans. What happens in California will spread throughout America. Well, we're going to see. Take out the communists in Sacramento, we'll see if that spreads across America.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, again, just like you say, get everything, you know, talk to, I already emailed them, and they might get in touch with you. I don't even know. But they have a way of their doing it, too, because they've been through all this. They've done all this stuff. What's happening to you? They've been on the other side doing filing it, so they might be very helpful for you. So I think you've got some good people on your side that can help you. And if it comes to a money situation, we can figure that out later, and how to get you some money. Because I can talk in my show, and you know, whatever. Don't worry about the money. I'm sure we can get some money up to help you somehow. Once you have everything in order that you're going to do, you know what I'm saying? And as you just present your case, when you deal with people, you just tell them, here's what it's going to cost me to do this. Here's what it's going to cost me to do that. And people like to help. I'm telling you, they want to know how they can help you. We get a lot of comments with people online that are really happy with what you're doing. And they say, oh, this guy's a fighter. He's this, he's that, he's good. And they want to help you, and they will help you. It's just, you know, make sure you go in the right direction, you know, with all the facts and everything like that. So, anyway, yeah. Well, I'm gonna see. I tuned in on this last meeting. I saw you right when you were up there, and then he shut the meeting down. So that's all I could see. Nothing else.
So, hey, Ryan, I have a question for you. When you sign up to speak at City Council in Sacramento, must you speak on an agenda item, or because we have a leeway that we're not required to speak on agenda items?
So they save the it's comments on matters not on the agenda. They save that for the dead end of the meeting. So a lot of times they'll be waiting till 9 o'clock to midnight to be talking on that. But they have other items, which is what I was speaking on. And on the other items, you are supposed to speak relevant to that item, which I was. I mentioned that Milstein, but I was going to talk about how she's wasting money that should be used on the city's budget. So it was, if you would have let me finish, it was totally relevant. But they don't want to hear any criticism in any way they can get rid of criticism. They love taking advantage of. That's what we saw.
Yeah. Are you the only one they come after like this? Or is there anybody else in Sacramento that goes to those meetings and gets arrested and kicked out?
So my friend is Julius Giles. He attends these meetings, and he's a black journalist. He's 37. He's pretty astute. He knows a lot about what's going on. He's got his own YouTube channel. I think he's got like 18,000 followers on Twitter. So he hasn't yet named the Jews, but I mean, he's kind of new to this. And then Guy Stevenson, he's like a 27-year Marine veteran. He goes to these meetings as well. And, there's some very good reasons why he doesn't yet speak out about the Jews. I'm not going to go into that right now, but, they both agree with what I say. It's just the fact of like getting up there and saying it. There is a gentleman. He's 91 years old. He owned his own, I think it was a janitorial business for like 60 years and, did very successfully in Sacramento. His name's Mac Worthy. He was married for 60 years. His wife just passed away, but he gets up there and the mayor shut him down twice. He's a black man and he will say the Jews are behind all this. He has no problem doing that. And,
they don't hear.
I'm sorry. He has no problem saying it. He's one. And then there's another gentleman, who owns a food business and he speaks occasionally. He knows, it's just, he gets all kinds of heat. He's got to be in his 70s or 80s as well. Another black gentleman, and, he knows what the problem is, but you know, getting up there and speaking, as we all know, fireworks go off everywhere when, you start to name the Jews. So, it's kind of disappointing at times, but you also have to be patient because 5 years ago, I didn't know anything about the Jews. So I'm a relative newcomer to the scene myself. So, you just have to wait until people, I think the more they recognize, they learn who's responsible and then they learn what would America's founders have done or what would, you know, other figures in history, how would they have responded to this? Cause I guarantee you they wouldn't be fence straddling and just like doing nothing.
Yep.
They would be, the men would be, I mean, Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. Now, how does Patrick Henry's give me liberty or give me death? How does that go together with the people who sit and watch silently and do nothing? And, I think it was Edmund Burke. He said, the only thing needed for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. And I think that's what we see too much. So Henry, I'm very happy for the work that you do. And I know, and Jim, you do your radio show. But we need more men that are able to have self-control and get up and do what needs to be done. It doesn't take many. A few men could do it.
Not only 3% of the population, right, to turn the tide.
Right. Did John from Delaware want to say something? Did he want to comment?
Hey, John.
Yes. John. Hello, everybody. Jim, right. Diane, Diana, Uncle Murray, Henry, and Ryan. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, I know a way that will make it a little easier to donate money to Ryan and anybody that is a Speak Free Radio host. If I could get you to pull up the Money Tree Publishing link for the shop, you can show the audience. I can walk you through it.
Okay, go ahead. That's good.
Can I get you to pull that up on the screen?
I'm sure Diana's got it. Yep.
Okay, so go to shop. Hit the shop link.
It's yep. Already up.
And then scroll down to the fourth line to the Money Tree Publishing. Donation. Go down two more lines.
Yeah. I hope she's okay.
All right. Right there, hit the MTP.
Oh, okay.
Hit that. And then see choose option. Hit choose option.
Yeah.
Oh. It must be a drop down, yeah?
Yeah, you should see a drop down.
Yep.
Oh, well, it's not coming up.
Donate to SFR Ryan.
Oh, there you go. Well, there should be more names on there. Your guy's name's on there. Hookbuster's on there, too.
Okay. All right, so that's how you do it. So then you just click on that, you put the thing in, and however you pay, right?
Yeah, minimum's $5, but you can donate. I don't know what the max is.
Okay.
I'm not sure. But okay. That's
cool.
One way you get, I don't know why the other names aren't coming up. All the radio host names should come up when you hit choose an option.
Yeah, but, the max donation is $6 million.
Well, that would probably have to be a Jew to donate that kind of money.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Sure, none of us are in the Federal Reserve.
I'm sure we can expect it any time now.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is, Ryan, we like to have you kind of be like a main person here that we're going to do this with, and set an example to show people that you're going out doing what you're doing, putting your life on the line here, and you know, hopefully we're going to get people to support you. I mean, that's what we want to do. And,
yeah.
You know, because we have to have somebody that can carry the torch for what's happening right now in this situation. And your situation seems to be really out there. I mean, that's what I said. You know, I mean, you've been really doing a hell of a job out there. Like six.
Thank you.
Six million. That's very generous of you, Diane. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that'd be something. I tell you, if you had a lot of money, you could fight them. Because then you just get someone, you pay all the people to do what you have to do. But Ryan's in a different spot because he's trying to do it without, you know, yeah, incurring a lot of
expense.
And people don't get it. You know, you gotta find out what are the filing fees for doing this.
That's right.
The whole court system is, that's why people don't do it, because they have it. So you gotta pay for this, to pay for that, and before you're even done, you get $500 in payments, and you haven't even got started.
That's right. Well, that's right.
And we get it. I know that. I see how they work. So hopefully we can be ahead of it with you. All right. And so once you get to the point that you're going to do what you have to do when you talk to Maggie and Jack and whoever else, maybe Diana can help you out too, I suppose. She's got good information. You just go from there. And let's see if we can work on this case of getting to those Sacramento city councilors and exposing them for what they are, because they think they could just you know, crap all over you here.
Yeah,
that's what they think they can do. And you know, that mayor, he's doing it. That's what he's doing. And nobody is taking him to task for it. And that's why he's doing it, because nobody's doing anything about it. So anyway, okay, Ryan, I know you've been really busy tonight because you had your show and you have 2 hour show. You're probably tired as hell right now, right?
A little bit. I did a 4 hour show, and I got a lot of other things to get around to. But I'm happy to be on with you and on your show. Very happy for your support, and I know you've been doing this for quite a long time. So I'm just happy to be part of the movement. And I know Henry's been taking a lot of flack for what he did. Standing up in, was it Michigan? I think it was Michigan.
Yeah, we ended up, I mean, we're on the defense side, not on the plaintiff side, because we don't have that kind of money, you know, and I don't mean to scare you, but, you know, I mean, we as defendants were successful. And fortunately, we had pro bono lawyers working our case. But at the end, the plaintiff had to pay $160,000.
Yeah, you
know, so, I mean, we're not talking about chum change here. If you're going to be a plaintiff, that's going to be a different kind of thing. You know, I mean, I don't advise that because I don't have the money to do that kind of stuff. And like, you know, Uncle Murray said, you know, I'd have to find a wealthy Jew to support that kind of stuff. But we're just out there trying to be we're legal. And they thought we were illegal, and they took us to court, and it went up to almost the Supreme Court. They appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said this case is too simple. Henry doesn't interfere with anybody's rights. He's just standing on the public arena, holding signs. And the law is supposedly content neutral. I was going to suggest tongue in cheek that you get a hold of the ACLU, but they're going to be they're going to be going after Jews because they are Jews. I mean, and that's the you know they wrote.
It wouldn't hurt. Look at it. I'm telling you, I've appealed to the ACLU too. They've never helped me, but I'm not saying you can't because sometimes they will do it. They'll jump on something like this, you know, because everything they get attention for, they get money for. So believe me, they'll get money for something. So anyway, that's where you stand there. You know, I would try them. I would try them because you definitely have a case and a half here, and but I would like to see them reject you, you know, too. And then you could say, well, here they are. I mean, here's the case they should be taking, but they're not going to take it because they're just part what everybody else. You know, I know. I've dealt with the ACLU. I've dealt with all these people. They're scumbags. They're just liars. And what are you going to do? You know, but you got to do what you have to do. Well, Ryan, I'm not going to hold you up because I know you got things to do. So I thank you for coming on, and hopefully you can maybe next week you could come on again to tell us what I'm going to try to watch the thing that happens here at that meeting live, and I'll be able to talk about it in my walk and talk the next day. But if you can come back maybe next Saturday, same time, everything the same. And you can update us again. You don't have to stay, you know, just get your stuff out. Tell us what happened and move on. Cause we know you got a show and you're out there doing stuff. And believe me, doing a show for a couple, 4 hours, boy, how come you're on 4 hours?
Well, it was a makeup because, last week's show didn't make it to the archives. So I redid it live those 2 hours. Then I did two more of the show today. So that's why it was 4 hours.
Wow. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Well, anyway,
how do we access your show?
It should be the archives of Speak Free Radio. If it's not there, hopefully that'll be a hair. And I hope I don't have to do a 6 hour show next week. That would not be good.
Well, you got to put a link on Masano News, don't you?
Well, yeah, MasanoNews.com is my website as well. There you go.
Like 3 to 5 and 5 to 7.
And then go to podcast. You can archive the show. Scroll back up to podcast.
Oh, the Ryan Machado show.
And then you hit podcast.
All right.
And then bam, right there. You click on Ryan Machado.
Oh, there you are. Okay. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, this is good. I mean, this Dave Gaharie's got a good situation here.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's really good. We got to get this, you know, Speak Free Radio site, you know, people that know it more so they can come here instead of going to these other places, get Alex Jones or whatever, you know, crap they want to know. We got to get the good people that are really out there and not part of their system getting their stuff out there. That's what we encourage people to do. So anyway, okay. So, Ryan, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Hopefully we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right, take care.
Nice meeting you all. Take care.
All right,
bye-bye. Have a good one.
If you have any other questions, fine, but I don't want to hold you up either.
I'm going to exit.
Thanks for coming back on, Henry. That was very timely.
I had to wash the dishes, you know. I'm known as dish dog around this house.
Awesome.
Okay.
We got to get it. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Good luck.
Alrighty, that was really good. Hi, everybody. Getting everybody in there like that.
That was remarkable.
Yeah, John, you're still with us. You have anything you want to talk about tonight? And I don't know if there's anybody else in the queue wanting to come in.
I just think your suggestion is very helpful with Marjorie and Jack Flynn with the affidavits.
Yeah.
I would like to see him go that route and get that mayor out of Sacramento, along with a few other members on his council.
Yeah, I mean, I've been over their stuff a little bit, you know, Jack and Maggie Flynn. I don't have their website right now. I don't know what it is, but they have a whole website. And I guess they've done well getting people to do this their way of what they do is they have what they call an affidavit. and you have to put it all right, you know, write everything down the way it's supposed to be, and you could take anybody to court if they violated your rights in some way, but you got to present it right, and then you present it to them. We talked about it today, didn't we, Diane, on the Walk and Talk?
Yeah, I believe it's called Citizens of the American Constitution.net. I'm going to put it in the. Think that's their website. I know I've got a number of them, but yeah, we talked about it.
Yeah, cool. And so it's very critical because they have a whole process that you have to follow to do it. And the thing is, it's a little worky. You got to do it exactly the way they're presenting it. And if you do it right, you present an affidavit. Let's say Ryan wants to do it with the mayor. So now you present the affidavit to the mayor. He gets this thing in the mail, or how it is presented to him. I'm not sure if it's done by a processing person giving it to him. I don't know. I'm not sure about all that. But anyway, they get it. And they see you're bringing charges against them, and you're addressing them saying, I feel you violated my rights here, whatever. How do you answer to this? And if they don't answer you back, then you have a case against them now because they didn't respond to you. Okay, they think they're going to just walk away from it because you're asking them directly. Did you do this or whatever happened here? And they can say, oh no, I'm not going to respond to them. Well, now what happens is legally they have violated that affidavit. So they actually are gonna have a problem here now. So now you could take them to court now, and they've already lost. They've already lost the case technically because they didn't answer the affidavit. So now when you go to court, the court has to look at that as saying they reneged on the affidavit, so they lost. So you got them by the balls. I'll tell you right now.
It's all about contracts,
and you're not using a lawyer. You're not using a bar.
Right. You don't need a lawyer. That's right. Yeah. So that's why that would be the way I would go with this at this point because it's not going to cost you any money. And you're going to really see how it works. Now, whether the court is going to be on your side with all this, technically they should be because this is all according to the way it's done. And they have to proceed the way it's done. And if they don't do that, then that's a whole nother problem. I never got into this. We were trying to get Joe to do this because he had some cases like this, the same thing. But then Joe got sick and he obviously didn't have the effort. He couldn't do it. I mean, he just couldn't do it. So
yeah.
Anyway, I would have loved to see Joe do this, but because he had a case too against what they did to him in the town city of Framingham. By violating his rights so many times, the things they did. And he could have took, all these people, one at a time. You just take them. Again, I don't know how it works collectively, but I think if you set an example with one person and you nail them to the wall, that's going to send a message. And I think that's right.
That's what I was talking about fines the other times. Hey, guys, what you should do is go to Webster's 1828 Dictionary and look up the definition of fine, and you'll see all the definitions. They all pertain to paying for good behavior. It's enforcing good behavior. And so these bastards doing what they're doing, they're subject to that. That's why I mentioned surety bonds. I wish I knew more about the surety bond process, but basically, you trust your kids in school, all those teachers and the principal, they have a surety bond to ensure their good behavior. So you send your kid to school, you get your kid back. Mostly in one piece, of course, you don't know about the psychological crap and all the other stuff they're doing, the grooming, the drag queens and all that crap, right? Mm-hmm. But it's supposed to be taking care of your kid. And if they don't, you sue them using the surety bond process. Like I said, I'll put the video up. It'll be on the channel tomorrow, guys. But what we got to do, money is the one thing that they're all subject to. So we can use that against them as well. So,
We can get a lot of people going and involved with this. John, did you want to say something?
No, I just gave an Uncle Mary. Boom.
Oh,
boom. Thank you, brother.
Well, no, I mean, we gotta unite here and try to support the people that are having issues. All right. And Ryan is gonna be doing his thing and going to those meetings, we really should support the guy. I mean, we really should. So hopefully, Tuesday we'll find out what happens if he gets arrested again. That's going to be something else. You know, I don't know how that's going to work out, but I mean, I'm sure that's what they're going to do, you know.
They're gonna arrest him again, but they're overstepping. This, I mean, that last arrest was complete overstep of boundaries there.
That's right.
You don't make the rules. Hey, guy, you don't make the rules. You're a functionary. You're supposed to sit there and wait for people to make their complaints and then address them, which obviously they haven't done.
That's right.
Crazy.
Yeah, these people, all these city council people and school committee people, same thing. They get away with so much that people, you know, you actually could go to a city council meeting and you could swear at that. You could swear at it if you want. You could say you're a son of a bitch. You know, you're this or that. There's really nothing they can do. But what they do is they make it look like they can stop you. And they do that. But again, you have your free speech to tell someone to go jump in the lake here, you know. But I mean, you don't really want to talk that way to them. But I'm just saying, you know. What is this we're seeing here?
They certainly deserve it, though.
Yeah. Oh, is this Maggie and Maggie and Jeff?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So, folks, any of you people watching this, the next day, the Hoaxbusters show, the next day, whatever, we definitely recommend you looking into this if you can, Jack and Maggie Flynn, and I don't know if you guys know. Edward G. Griffin, but he has a thing called Red Pill Expo. He brings in all these people to talk. I guess he's having some sort of meeting in, I don't know if it's like South Dakota or North Dakota or someplace like that. And I think they're even going to it. They've been invited to it. And they have all these people that represent all different views, you know, health people, tax people, law people, whatever. And it's all about education, okay? That's what the Red Pill Expo is all about. Now, let me just tell you how I feel about the Red Pill Expo, okay?
Oh, boy.
Well, no. I mean, when you go, because I've talked to Edward Griffin. I've emailed him. And I brought up, see, I feel he's good and what he says is good. And he talks about the Federal Reserve Bank, and that's great. And, you know, he wrote the book Jekyll Island or whatever the hell. I think that's the name of the book.
Jekyll Island. Yep, right? You got it.
Yeah, okay. So the thing is, he talks about all this good stuff, but he won't talk about the Jews. I mean, he told me, he goes, he doesn't think that's a problem. So this Red Pill Expo, great. You know, you get health people, all these people. But there's a lot. See, here's the thing, okay? There's a lot of Jews involved with his Red Pill Expo. Now, let's say I wanted to talk to Edward G. Griffin. Say, Edward, I would love to come and be part of this.
Time.
and I want to talk about the Holocaust. You think I could come in there and give everybody a good education about the Holocaust?
You have them screaming from the rafters, man.
Well, here's the thing. Let's say he did. He said he'd like to have me in there to do it. I will guarantee all the Jews that are in his Red Pill Expo situation there, education thing, they would leave. I'll guarantee it, if they're Jews.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they'd want him sanctioned after that. That's also.
Right. Yep. Oh, His whole life would blow apart.
Oh, Reese,
Reese is here. Mr. E.
Hey, Reese.
What's going on? Hey, Mr. Reese.
Missed you last week.
Actually, I tuned in for a little bit, but see, it's got to capture my interest for me to call in. It has to be a subject that sparks my interest. So whatever it wasn't really up my alley, but I did listen to Ryan Massano earlier today. I happened to tune in, and I really enjoyed his commentary. I mean, this guy is a glimmer of hope in today's world of people that seem to be beaten, a defeated mindset. This guy is actually speaking truth to power. I respect him for it, and he's doing what a lot of others have done. I know two people who did the same thing. You guys probably know Art from Philly.
No.
He was a regular guest on Rick Adams' program. Very informed guy. I mean, very well-informed guy. You could go to his website on No Place for Corruption. And, I mean, you got to see the work he did on there. He basically went down the rabbit holes of corruption in the state of Philadelphia, and he did what Ryan is doing.
City of.
He went to, yeah. And they went after him. And, you know, he was very well-spoken, very professional, didn't use the J word too much. You know, he did speak about Jewish organized crime, but he was very careful. And they targeted him, and they created problems with his business. And I haven't heard from him in a long time. And he was a breath of fresh air because he would come on and really inform you with the details of how this organized crime was working in Philadelphia and throughout the state of Pennsylvania. Yeah. And he had gone through all the government contracts, how they controlled sanitation, they controlled the school busing, and, you know, had a bully pulpit in the legislature. But I want to mention one thing, if Ryan happens to be listening, that I learned from Gary Null in New York City. And Gary Null had fought the same fight, but he wasn't really going after the Jews. He was going after other issues of infringements on our rights in New York City, ramrodding things down like the city bike racks, 5G towers, fluoridation of the water. And what Gary Null found out was that when you go to these community board meetings or local assembly that they're having, a city assembly meeting to have a voice, these meetings are stacked with plants that are actually put in the audience that are based on the RAND Corporation's method, so that when you go there, what you don't realize is those that raise their hands and want to voice opposition are all been planted there ahead of time, so that it would be more or less a plebiscite. They would get agreeable opinions that would basically go along with whatever agenda they were pushing. I found that very enlightening because he had really, been one of the main voices in New York City area that was opposing a lot of these new government mandates that were going around the city. So, you know, you're really up against a wall of corruption. And especially now, I mean, Gary Null, that goes back over 15 years ago. Now, with Kathy Hochul and basically a Jewish hegemony over, you know, virtually any body in New York City, they have domination over. It's going to be an uphill battle. But I do, you know, say, look, he's fighting the good fight. And there's many that have gone before him. Not all have won the battle. But at least he's not sitting idly by and just complaining about things. He's being a force for good in his community. So God bless him for that.
Yeah, no.
Thanks, Russ.
You brought up an interesting point because even though this isn't the topic we're talking about, but Agenda 2030 or whatever the hell number it is now, okay, this is something that they pack the audience with too. In other words, they'll say, we're going to be talking about rebuilding our city and making our city better, you know, for transportation, better for this, and making everything really good. And they're going to say, we're going to have a meeting. We're going to have a meeting about it so the people of the town and city can come out and give their opinions. We want to hear your opinions. And so now you go to the meeting, and what happens is they have a really cool way of doing this. They get everybody in tables. They put five or six people at a table, seven people or whatever the hell. And every table, you're going to be able to get what you have to say. But there's a leader at that table. That what they mm-hmm. do is they direct the questions to what they want to do. So in other words, you might get what you want out, but then then they will direct the whole thing to go like, well, what do you think about this? And you know, they throw something in there, so now everybody starts thinking about that, and now you're agreeing with them, and then all of a sudden they pass something at that meeting that everybody agreed with that you really didn't agree with. You see what I'm saying?
The complete opposite of what you wanted, the old bait and switch.
But this is how they do it. I mean, people don't understand this agenda. Delphi method. There you go. That's what it is.
Perfect.
It's called the Delphi method. And believe me,
Delphi, yes.
Delphi. They are 10 steps ahead of us, and we got to how to get things done. And you're sitting there thinking that, you know, you contributed to this, and, you know, oh, no, you didn't. They already had what they wanted to do at that meeting, okay? Yeah. You think you had something to say about it, but they made it come around to what they were going to present, and they present it, they get it passed, and then they go before the city council and say, well, we had our town meeting, and everybody at that town meeting seemed to agree what our plan was. I'm just saying, but that's how it works. Yeah.
Remember that crap? There's crap in Germany, right? So pro-pedophile group celebrates as Germany passes lessening of pedophile laws. That's not a real title. The real title is pedophiles agents get them to drop the pedophile laws. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. Bunch of crap.
Yeah, people just don't. It's just like the voting situation here, right? Everybody, everybody's getting ready for the next election, this and that. But it doesn't matter who you vote for. I mean, they already haven't figured out who's going to be the man that they're going to pick. All right, it doesn't matter. Democrat, don't matter. Oh well, you know, the Trump, he's the best. He's the best of the two, and you know, lesser two evils. Really, he's just as bad as everybody else. He's just as evil. Well, and everybody thinks that he's going to be the man. Well, he might be better than Biden, but he's not going to be better for you or me.
No.
You know what? Jim's got a good point now. And again, Trump lately has disgraced himself with his comment on, we need to get this massacre finished more effectively. Let's go in and finish them off, comment that he made recently, I think on Sean Hannity's program.
I've heard that, yeah.
He absolutely disgraced himself. And I know what it is. He's surrounded by Kushner, his son-in-law, and the rest of these rabid Zionists who are basically putting things in here. See, Trump, I'll tell you, I met him one time, and I know a woman that's met him five times and had lengthy conversations when he had fundraisers. And he's a good guy if you meet him. He's not evil. He's not malicious. He's not a dirtbag. You know, he's not, like many of these other politicians. But he's naive, and he's easily influenced by people. That's his real Achilles heel, is that he listens to people, and he can't, in his mind, imagine that these people are malignant as they are. And so, unfortunately, he's not accomplishing very much, you know?
Well, he's learning just how evil the homosexual banking mafia is. And also, people fail to see that he's being held hostage, just like Mike Johnson. You know, with all his flip-flopping and all the crap he's doing. He's clearly being held hostage because otherwise he'd just say, hey, listen, you know? But,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, who did he appoint? Yeah. Who did he put in front of the border wall? He appointed Jared Kushner over the border wall in his administration. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah. Crazy. Right. Well, okay, we're coming to an end of our discussion today. I want to thank everybody for being in there. Reese, thank you for coming in, even for a few minutes. That was good. We're gonna conclude with, I think I know what this is, Cohen. This is that guy Leonard Cohen, is it? But it's a good little cartoon or whatever you want to call it.
They sentenced me to 20 years of boredom. For trying to change the system from where they are. I'm coming now, I'm coming to reward them. First, we take Manhattan. Then we take Berlin. I'm guided by a signal in the heavens. I'm guided by this birthmark on my skin. I'm guided by the beauty of our weapons. First, we take Manhattan. Then we take Berlin.
first, we take Manhattan. Then we take Berlin.
My God, the Jews have been totally, practically totally, to destroy other peoples and exploit other peoples. And that's really what's going on in this country. Every one of the 10 largest Hollywood studios of movies and television are all Jewish controlled. Look at the bankers, the Rothschilds. They weren't just Rothschilds. They were part and parcel of a leading Jewish community. We can just go on and on. The Federal Reserve bankers that control and ruin this country.
Okay, folks. Anyway, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next week. All right. Take care. Good night, everyone.
Bye. Ghostbusters!